We have a very special treat this morning. We have Bill and Kathy Britton, right, from Baptist Children's Home. And I'm really excited to hear about their ministry. I don't know much about this ministry, so I'm really excited to hear how God is using you guys. And so I'm going to give the floor over to Bill, and the time is yours, brother.
Good morning. Nice to see you all. Hey, Kathy is from between Skaneateles and Auburn. That's where she's from. So I'm a Pennsylvanian, and I feel uncomfortable here. No, actually. Actually, I grew up in Clark Summit, Pennsylvania, so it's nice to be in the mountains because we have lived in the Midwest for probably pushing close to 30 years now. We're with the Baptist Children's Home. The Baptist Children's Home takes care of orphan, needy, and disadvantaged children, about 800 children that we're caring for presently. And so this morning, I'm going to preach a message to you, and then I'm going to do a brief presentation of the Children's Home, and that will talk about what we do in the U.S., but I just don't have time during that time to both preach and talk about the Children's Home to do anything really with our international work. So what I thought I would do is kind of walk you through what we're doing internationally in Sunday school, and then, of course, you'll get the presentation in the main service. So, and I hope you can see well. Please, if you need to just move someplace where you can see the pictures. Oh, by the way, all the pictures you're going to see in any presentation that we have here are kids who are in our care who were in our care. And so these are pretty recent pictures. As a matter of fact, that picture right there, this was last year, and those pumpkins that were being grown there were for the company of Gerber that was right next to our group home. So we took some pictures there. In all these different ways we care for kids, and I'll talk about that in the morning service, because some of these ways we don't care for kids internationally, but I'm going to take you on an international trip here. She's clicking and it's not going anywhere. It's a lot like how we get along. She says something, but we're not getting anywhere. She's not getting anywhere with me. We care for about 350 kids in 17 different locations in India, and we're going to go there. We care for 125 kids in 5 different locations in Myanmar or Burma, and then we care for about 360 kids in Liberia, West Africa. We're going to go to all those places. You got it? Okay, we're going to go to Myanmar or Burma. Burma is the traditional name of the country. It was changed by the government there. The government that's in control of Myanmar right now is a military coup government that took over the government. This is one of the most oppressive governments on the face of the earth. As a matter of fact, until recently, I took Kathy on this trip, but I wouldn't take her on the trip earlier. It was probably too dangerous to do that. And the interesting thing is Baptist Children's Home. People who know Baptist Children's Home will know these people are the people who care for kids. Well, actually, Baptist Children's Home is on the cutting edge of missions in a couple of closed countries, one of them being Myanmar, and we're going to go there right now. And you can see the different locations where we serve there. We have 2 homes on one property. This area is called Machina. It's an interesting area because near these homes, I was there, and there was a cement highway that was twice or more wide than this building. And our road, and I said, what's this road? Why this road? Kind of seems in the middle of nowhere. They said, Bill, this was the airstrip built by the U.S. Air Corps, the Army Air Corps, before it was known as the Air Force. And out of this area, there was a U.S. Base where they would launch bombers. The bombers would fly to China to bomb the Japanese who had invaded China. So it was interesting because I've met some Americans who actually served in this area, and they called it Michina, but the local people call it Machina. And this is where those two, she just saw the home there, and we have 2 homes on this property, and isn't it really neat how God works? Because an American businessman paid for both of those homes completely. And that's just a very kind thing to do in a very, very poor and needy country. And here's the children. And when I talk about need in these countries too, we really have to understand, because need or being poor in a third world country means something completely different. In a third world country, it means you don't know when and if you're going to eat next. That's what it means. It doesn't mean that you don't own a car or don't have cable TV or things like that. It might mean in the U.S. It means, so when I talk about children who are poor, I need you to think in those kind of contexts, that they're not even sure how they're going to survive. Next picture. This is the team of people who care for the children. And you can see the young man on the right, the tall young man, that's Mung Ong. And I tell his story a little bit. He was one of our orphan children and grew up in the home. He actually has two bachelor's degrees, one in Bible and one in psychology. And he lives in with the boys. I tell his story a little bit because he's asked us to pray for him. He wants a wife and he wants his wife to live in with him and continue to take care of the children. So you got to have the right woman to do that. And then you can see the girl on the far left. She lives in with the girls, and there's a grandfather and grandmother and a whole team of people who take care of the children there. So pray for Mung Ong. By the way, he's available. He's handsome, very smart, and he's almost as tall as I am, which I'm almost 6 feet, which is really tall for a Burmese guy. This is Paul, and Paul's with his wife. Paul is also one of our orphan children. Paul grew up in the children's home there, and then Paul went to college to study art. Out of 500 students, 9 students were chosen got a scholarship to go to Japan to study under Japanese artists and to visit their museums there. And Paul was one of those people. Shows how talented he is. What you can see on the right there is a watercolor that Paul painted. After Paul graduated from college, he came back and got a job teaching in a local college that's near where our home is. And there he met a nice Christian girl and they got married. Well, the girl that he met was actually one of the girls he grew up with in the home. They weren't interested in each other when they were young. So she's also one of our orphan children. And there's Paul standing with his wife and, of course, me and their newborn baby in front of their house. Now, these children are an area that's in northwest Burma, close to the northeast Indian border. And most all of our kids that we care for live in homes that we provide, either foster homes or group homes. But these kids are still living in their own homes. But this is just a very poor area. So this is kind of a wraparound program because these kids were so needy. And just to give you an idea, the girl in the front with the pink hoodie on, with the green shirt, you can't tell in this picture, she's a really cute girl, but she had sores all the way around her mouth. And I asked them what was wrong with her, and they said, she's HIV positive. And I said, is she getting medicine? And they said, no. And I turned to them, I said, you'll realize she'll die within 5 years normally without treatment. And they said her mother was getting treatment and medication, but she wasn't. And so it's a very patriarchal culture there. And the leader of this church association is a man they consider the Billy Graham of Burma. And so I met with him in the capital, and I said, talked about this girl. And it was interesting, their response. They didn't say this exactly, but this was the kind of vibe I got back from talking to them. Because, you know, Americans have a different perspective on life than sometimes other people, and particularly people in third world countries. And the mentality was this, something like this: Bill, don't you understand that newborn children die, young children die, middle-aged people die, and old people die? In other words, death is no respecter of persons. So us as an American saying, this young girl needs this help, that's just not the thinking over there, because they're used to people just dying. So who knows how many people in their culture are walking around with full-blown AIDS who aren't getting any treatment at all. But we were there and we said, well, we need to make sure she gets care. And we said, if they couldn't get the medicine for her there, what we'll do is we'll sneak her into India, because we've got a home about 20 miles away in India where we knew she could get the medication. But thankfully, they were able to get the medication for her. But we were fully ready to sneak her into another country so that she could live. And actually, living in the group home over in India would be a great place for her too. And we'll take you to that area. This is another one of our homes there. This is in the foothills of the Himalaya Mountains. Just to give you an idea, Mount Washington, where Mount Washington is the highest point east of the Mississippi, this entire town is 200 feet taller than that, just to give you an idea. So we drove here in like 4 hours in this SUV going on the edges of these mountains. It was so steep, Kathy didn't want to look out the window, you know what I mean? Because it's just a sheer drop-off. And we can only go to these places in the dry season. We can't go in the rainy season because those roads easily wash out. And so we got there, and of course there's beautiful children there who we're caring for. And it was interesting, not this trip, but the trip before, so we're talking 4 years ago when I was there. I was just there recently, but 4 years ago I was there, and five of our kids graduated from high school. And I said, so where are those kids now and what are they doing? It was interesting to learn. All five of them moved to Malaysia. And I said, why did they move to Malaysia? And they all said, oh, they're all well-educated, smart kids, and they moved to Malaysia because they can get good jobs there. And so it was just interesting. You know, I was just thought the kids kind of would stay there, but no, the kids had marketable skills and they moved away. Not that that ever happens around here, right? Now, this is one of our homes that's in the capital of Rangoon, and it's a beautiful home, and it's with a church association. As a matter of fact, with Bible is International through Baptist Mid Missions, they're actually doing a translation of the Bible into the Chin language. And our kids go to church on a Bible college campus that's only a couple blocks away. So our children go to church every Sunday with about 200 Bible college students, which is really exciting for our kids to do that. And also, just so you know, and we're very proud of this, the Baptist Children's Home is known as, when kids choose to go to a Bible college from the Baptist Children's Home, normally they're some of the best students at Bible college because they already know the Bible so well from growing up in our homes. And so actually in the college that our kids go to, the president has a couple of high assistants, and we think the highest assistant there is a girl who grew up in our home. We know she is. And so that's pretty exciting. Here's the kids, and they're beautiful kids. And there's the team of people who take care of them. There's a mother and a father and a couple other assistants. They're wearing Baptist Children's Home shirts. I bring them over for them, and so they've got them on. Get their picture taken. This is another one of our... Now, the interesting thing about Burma, the southern half of Burma is really Buddhist. And Buddhism really resisted Christianity when it was brought here by Westerners. But still, missionaries still reach out to Buddhists and some get saved. But just generally, the tribal people receive Christianity much more readily than did the Buddhists. So also the Buddhists, and this isn't Buddhism overall, but the Buddhists can persecute Christians in Burma. And it's a fact. And so I was really surprised last time I went because it was something new. Can you see something unusual that you probably wouldn't put on the side of your house if you were in a country that there's persecution? Yeah, you notice they put a cross right on the side of the house. And I kind of pulled Pao Jin, who's the pastor and the house father. I pulled him aside, and I didn't say it this way, but I'm like, are you crazy? Why'd you put a cross right on the side of the house? And he said, I'm glad you noticed we put a cross on the house. He said, it's an interesting story. He said, you know, every day the Buddhist monks go throughout the city, and of course they come to our house too, taking up an offering for the Buddhist temples. And of course, these temples are just plain paganism. You have to understand, sometimes even Christians and sometimes even in our schools, we're giving too much credit to some of these religions. And I'm not saying people who are Buddhists are bad people. I'm just saying the religion that they're involved in is paganism. That's what it is. They worship idols. Actually, we were in one idol where there was a Buddha that was literally bigger than this church building entirely, a giant, and they worship there. And so the Buddhist monks go out into everybody's house, they go to every business, and as far as I'm concerned, they sing an irritating song until you throw money at them. And it's interesting, though, that many of the Buddhist monks are actually orphan children who grew up in state-run orphanages, and those orphanages train them to be Buddhist monks. So actually, our churches there have outreach to the Buddhist monks so they can hear the gospel. And like I said, not all the Buddhists are the same. As a matter of fact, there was a group of Buddhist people who were walking by our home and saw all the children playing outside. And they said, so what do you do here? And they said, we take care of orphan, needy, and disadvantaged children. And they looked at our house, and you can kind of see in the back to the right. Can you see that tower right there? And there wasn't a tower there. We had a... a cistern on the ground, but not a tower for the water. So you want to collect your water in a tower, and then you have running water throughout the house instead of pumping it all the time. And they said, I noticed that you have a cistern, but you don't have a tower. And they said, no, that Buddhist group came back and built that tower and paid for it. Isn't that a wonderful thing? So it's not to put down Buddhist people. It's just to say they don't know the gospel. And then also, one of the things that's true about our homes in almost all these countries that we work in, many times our home is also a church plant. So Pao Jin, the house father and his wife, is a pastor and his wife, and they just added a metal roof on the top of this home to give it another story, because between 50 and 60 people every Sunday come to church at this house. And so when I go visit these houses, a lot of times I like to bring pastors with me as well, because now I used to be a pastor, but now I'm not creating all these messages, because when I go out to visit, they always want someone to preach. And they'll bring churches together and doing that. And I'm really there for administrative purposes, so I bring people along with me. Here's a picture of our kids, beautiful kids. And then the next picture, I think, is our staff over there. That's Pao Jin on the right and his wife. And it's interesting because these two ladies help out with the kids. And the lady in the peach-colored shirt, I'll just call it that, when we ever go to visit these places, we bring gifts for the children. We bring gifts for the adults. So we bring monetary gifts also for the adults who are caring for the kids. And when we were about to leave, the kids started standing up and giving testimony. Thank you for the gifts that you gave us. We bring them toys and candy and stuff. And then this lady stood up and she came forward and all the kids started murmuring. And I thought, what's going on? These kids are normally very respectful. And I turned to Pao Jin and I said, why are the kids murmuring like this? And he said, because this lady never speaks in public. She's very shy. So we're all wondering, what is she going to say? And she got up and she said, I want to thank you for caring for the children. And I want to thank you for caring for us. Because she said, we know that you come from the other side of the world, and it actually is, it's 11 and a half hours, it's the other side of the world, and you care for these children, you care for us. And she said, I want to thank you for the gifts that you gave us. And she said, I want to thank you for the monetary gift that you gave us, because she said it was the most amount of money I've ever received at one time in my entire life. It was the equivalent of $22. And I say that to you to say, you know, the Bible's true. If we have food and shelter, we have enough. You know, and God has blessed us as Americans with so much. So my thinking is, and this goes back to some of us who are older, remember how the cream used to rise to the top of the milk? And we could just take a little bit of that cream off the top, and that would be someone else's milk. You know what I mean? Just use a little bit of the overflow we have, and we can bless so many people. And it was just great to see her be so thankful, and she truly was. And I don't think she thought of herself as needy because God was meeting her needs, you know, and maybe if we could have some of that attitude too, we'd be a little bit more content with what we have. I just love these pictures, two of these pictures. The girls on the left, this is really an illustration of a little bit of a sermon. You know, so often we think it's adults and even pastors and people in charge that we're leaders over groups of people and we have a big impact on those people. But I'll tell you this, our kids in our home love and impact each other. And so these girls, I just said, can I take your picture? And they all of a sudden leaned over like this. And what's that say about their relationship? They're relying on each other. They're leaning on each other. Even to this day, we've got since the Baptist Children's Home started in 1953, and I'm only a 1963 model year, is we have older people that I am coming into our office saying, and they want to talk about the kids that they grew up with because they're like their brothers and sisters. And so what it points out is that, you know, in all these groups, they network and they lean on each other. And so those girls are actually not leaning on each other emotionally, spiritually, and otherwise. And then the girl there on the right, I just took a picture there because we were at an area, they call it the confluence, where two rivers come together. And it's a place where people picnic and just go out and stand by the river. And we were there and there was fishing boats there and they were bringing their catch. And I said to the leaders there, I said, what kind of fish are they catching? We walked down and looked at them. And by the way, the fish they were catching are carp. I recognize carp when I see them. And I said, would it be good for us to bring fish back to the kids? And I don't know how many fish we bought, like 11 big fish we brought back, something like that. And of course, she's eating it in that bowl right there. And they really know how to cook it. And I had some of it. And I'm not a big fish fan, but they really know how to roast this fish and cook it really well. And it's great fish. Now we're going to go to India. India is an interesting country. First of all, it's a very diverse country. You see, when Great Britain ruled the UK, when it ruled India, it ruled it through controlling small kingdoms. So India really wasn't just one people. It was ruled through these small kingdoms, very diverse, 1,800 different dialects. It is 84 to 87% Hindu. And so if you know someone in India, you don't know all of India because it is that diverse. And so And also, India has over 1 billion people there, soon to surpass China as the most populated country in the world, and only has one-third the land mass of the U.S. So very diverse area, and you can see all the different areas. We care for over 350 children in all these different areas. Now, how did we get in international care anyway, the Baptist Children's Home? Well, there was a Baptist Mid-Missions missionary who was an Indian national in southern India who was working with a young couple who really had a passion for reaching out to the street and orphan kids, and they didn't know how to do it. So this Baptist Mid-Missions missionary knew about the Baptist Children's Home, was in one of our supporting churches, and they contacted us and they said, hey, would you guys train this couple? If we got them over to the United States, would you train them on how to care for kids? And we thought that would be a wonderful thing to do. So they stayed in the U.S. for like 10 months. And the man who I actually was one of the people who helped train is one of my best friends now. And went back to India, started a ministry. That ministry alone has planted over 400 churches, plus has a number of our group homes. But this was the first group home we built in India, and it was a beautiful home. And some people sometimes ask me, so I'll just tell you, what does a house like that cost? Well, when we built that house probably back in the late 90s, it cost us $200,000, but to build that house today would probably cost $400,000 or $500,000. It just happens to be this area in India is near where a medical college is, and when we bought the property, it was inexpensive. Well, it just went right through the roof. And that just isn't true in other places in India. It can be much less expensive, but it's expensive there. And in southern India, we don't mix boys and girls in the same home. It's not culturally appropriate. So this is a boys' home, and can you guess what's next? A girls' home. And here's the Gilgal home. And you can see the beautiful girls there. And then, by the way, on the far left in the back is my son Tommy. And we were just with Kathy's mom over in Skaney Atlas. And he's there right now. And then Jeff Oswald, who's our director of our Michigan branch. And then Abraham Thomas, who's my buddy, the one I said is my friend. And I'm the other big white guy right there in Kathy. Oh, and just Kathy's just pointing out, she said, well, how many children? Well, in our homes overseas, the average amount of children in those homes is 20. And that's a culturally acceptable amount. You see, in the U.S., we can only have 8 non-related children in a group home. That's by state rule. And but in these homes, 20 and more are what's in these homes. But the average amount is about 20. I think you'll see that when you look at pictures. Also, Kathy points out to me, you'll notice some of the kids don't have shoes on. They don't have shoes on just because we were in the house and we came outside and we took their picture. So they wear sandals and they do have shoes. So. But you'll see, we just walked outside, so we took their picture. This home, when we were just there in March, we just cut the ribbon for this home. This home is going to care for 20 boys on one family on one floor and another family of 20 boys on the top floor. The great room in these homes was bigger than the entire homes that these kids were living in before. And it's a nice sized piece of property, and there's the families who are going to be living there. They weren't moved in yet. We were just there cutting the ribbon. And then we'll go to another one of these pictures, and we're in the process of raising the money to build the home for these third group of kids. Now, this is up in northeast India, and this is actually the area. The next picture is actually that's the boys' home. This is the girls' home, and this is where that girl would have moved if we had moved her from Burma over there, 20 miles away. And you'll notice in northeast India, these people don't look more, like, so you're loose of someone looking Indian. We're moving up toward China, so they look more Chinese, if you will. And there's the 43 boys and 28 girls who live in our home. Now, why so many kids in that home? Well, we normally wouldn't like the 43 boys in that home, but you see, it's on this campus, and on this campus is this Christian school. And the Christian school we work very closely with. As a matter of fact, the young man standing between Jeff Oswald and me, he's one of our boys who grew up, and now he's a teacher in the school. So 880 students attend this school along with our kids. So it's really a big campus feel. So it's really a good support place for the kids to go. As a matter of fact, they could go to that school, and they could go right across the way to the Bible college across the street. And so it's a great place. What'd you say? Oh, okay. This is another one of our homes. This is the foothills of the Himalaya Mountains also, but this is on the Indian side of the border, and this is our Tabor home. And this home is our Stefanus home. And it was interesting, in 2016, there was an earthquake that destroyed two of our homes. Now, they didn't collapse completely, but they were so, the walls were so cracked and everything that they were uninhabitable. And so I was out at churches, just like I'm with you, and I was at a church that supports us up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, which is also a remote location. And I said that our homes were destroyed, and a lady came up to me afterward, and she said, "How much would it be to rebuild that home?" And she wrote me a check for the entire amount, and there's the new home. Isn't it great? And just people are generous that way. And then the next picture is another one of our homes, same situation. I was in Illinois, one of our supporting churches, and a man came up to me and he said, "The company that I work for every year gives me a generous bonus." And we had started raising the money, but we only had a few thousand dollars all raised for it. And he came and he said, "How much more money do you need?" And I told him, he said, "I want to help out with that." Well, he didn't want to help out. He sent a check for the entire amount for the home. And I just want to say, you know, everybody doesn't have the ability to do that. But, you know, when people do what they can do, it meets the needs that God has out there, doesn't it? And it's a great thing. And so the great thing is both those homes are stick-built homes, not cement-built homes, so they can handle the earthquake better. You know, they'll shake without coming down. The other ones were brick with cement on the outside, and they just can't handle that. Now, sadly, what's going on in India, some of you may know that India is right now being ruled, the administration that's in India, been voted in, is the BJP party. And the BJP party is a militant Hindu party. They believe that India is Hindu and Hindus are for India. And as a result of that, not openly, but they persecute Christians, and you just don't read about it in the newspaper or anything. It just is really happening. As a matter of fact, when you go into some of these villages and you try to start a church, and only nationals can do this because India is a closed country, the only missionaries that can get into India are translators. And the only reason they can get in is because India wants these unknown languages translated. Into written form. So in other words, it's good for the government. That's the only reason they let translators in. So any other work you're doing, you've got to work with nationals. And that's where we do all our work. But these Hindus will drive a church right out. They won't even let it start. But interestingly enough, our friends have gone into these villages and said, "Well, we want to start a home to care for the orphan and street kids." And the Hindus have said, "Okay," which is great. So we start a home over there. And then, of course, because we're Christians, what do we have on Sunday? Church. And you get what just happened, don't you? The group home becomes a church plant. And so when I go to visit our church, our group homes, often the church is meeting there on Sunday. And that's an exciting way that we're on the cutting edge, if you will, because we're meeting an important societal need, and they like that. And so they'll put up with the church because they know we're helping the needy kids. But the problem is that we're having right now is that BJP party is persecuting the church, and they just came up with, and this wouldn't be a part of the persecution, they came up with child care rules. They never had child care rules before, and nothing's wrong with coming up with child care rules. We're used to child care rules, very strict ones here, even in the U.S. But the problem is they're being administered by local officials, some of them who are corrupt, and it's mixed with a government that doesn't like Christians. And so what had happened is four of our homes ended up closing as a result of this. Now, the Baptist Children's Home is not summer camp. When these homes close, children lose their home. And so our children, four homes, lost their home. And some of the kids were even coming back to the house parents and calling them saying, "Mommy and Daddy, when can we come home?" And they aren't coming home. Because if you take in these kids outside of registering with these laws, the penalty for this is a fine and imprisonment. And so we've got a problem. And so these kids had to go back to the villages that they were from. Our people just had to find relatives and friends who might be willing to take them in again. So pray for this. We thought we could have lost almost all of our homes in India, and we thought for sure we were probably going to lose seven of our homes, but praise the Lord, we didn't. We were able to get them registered in certain locations. And then it was interesting because a couple of our homes, when the government came through in certain areas that aren't as corrupt as other areas, when the government came through and looked at our homes, they actually placed kids in our homes. Isn't that great? But of course, that's not consistent across India overall. And then, of course, one of my questions was, I said, "Hey, they placed kids with us. Are they going to help us with some money?" And what was the answer? No. Just so, some things are more consistent than others. Next picture. We're going to Liberia, West Africa. Liberia is one of the poorest countries in the world. Some of you may know because there's a lot of U.S. missionaries in Liberia. Baptist Mid-Missions, ABWE, and mission agencies like that had extensive works in there. A lot of believers that they had won to Christ helped to get the churches really organized and come together. But what had happened was a former government employee, disgruntled guy, left the country under one administration. He went and met with Muammar Gaddafi of Libya. Now, Libya isn't anywhere near Liberia, but Muammar Gaddafi was an international sponsor of terrorism. Some of you who follow the news knew that you heard that he was. Well, he actually was. And so they put an army together, and this army, this Muslim army, invaded Liberia to take over the country. When it came in, it splintered into various factions. Anarchy took place. Anybody with any money, and most every missionary left. A couple of the missionaries that actually stayed were martyred when they stayed there. And so Liberia, the only people left in the country were really poor people. And so the government was on its second military coup. Some of you heard the name Charles Taylor before. So at one time, Liberia was the most stable country in Africa, and it was the only democratically ruled country in Africa. Think about this. You know, Liberia as a government was organized by former slaves who the U.S. said, if you want to go back to Africa, we'll pay your way. And then the constitution of the country was actually written by Harvard University years and years ago. And so there's always been a close relationship with the U.S. and Liberia. Can you guess what colors their flag is? Red, white, and blue, exactly. It looks like the Texas flag. They call it the Lone Star. And so even in Western Africa, when other Western African people meet Liberians, one of the things they would call them is they'd call them Liberian Americans. It's just an interesting thing. But most people in Liberia aren't the relatives, if you will, or descendants of slaves. Most of them are local tribal groups like Mandinko and other tribal groups who live in Africa. So it's an interesting dynamic there. But here this country had this 15-year civil war, and it was horrific. It was terrible what happened to these people. The stories, even with young children here, I can't even tell the stories of how brutal it was. And so the churches there were contacting us. Of course, they were our relatives because our missionaries brought the gospel there and everything and raised these people. They said, we've got so many orphan children and street kids. Our families are just taking them in and they have no money. So in 2003 is when the war ended. We went in 2004 and we started making these families in the local church our foster families. And so that's how we got started in Liberia. And next picture. Oh, this is the various locations that we're in. Liberia, by the way, is the size of the state of Tennessee. It's broken up not into states, it's broken up into counties. So if you what county do you live in? So actually, this is the town of Zorzor, or the city of Zorzor, in the county of Lofa. And this is our group home. We have 24 children who live in this home. And when we started this home, and that would have been the mid-2000s, there wasn't a good place for our kids to go to school. So we created a Christian school called Zorzor Christian Academy, and that's right next to our property. 200 students attend this school. In the next picture, what did you say? She's saying she's trying to push that, but it's not being cooperative. There's me and my son, Tommy, just addressing the students there at the school. And then this village is Kapele Tuo. This is just a village in the interior of Liberia, kind of a remote village, but all that area around there, everyone knows about the evil black voodoo magic that's done in this city, in this town. It's notorious. As a matter of fact, Christians are even afraid of this village. Well, I just want to remind you, the church is an offensive weapon. Did you know that? That's why when the scripture says, "In the gates of hell shall not what?" Just think about that. So I love when the Bible puts God and the gospel and Christ in the negative terms. So in other words, Christ in the gospel is the thief that's breaking into Satan's house and stealing out people. I love that picture. And so if you're God and you've got this village that's got this evil voodoo in it, do you ignore it? Where do you plant a church? Right in it. God's on the offense here. And we got to remember that as Christians. This village is known. I mean, the evil stuff that goes on there is known throughout the country. And God planted a church there. Now, interesting thing enough is the local village people have had the government come in. They've had other nonprofits come in and try to put in wells there. Next picture. Because the people drink out of this. Go back there then if you need to. There you go. She's got to make sure it advances. They drink out of this. And they believe that the water is magical. I think that water's magical. You drink that water and you'll get diarrhea and dysentery and some other waterborne illness just like that, just like magic. Now, it's interesting because we went there and we actually saw the wells. And so one of our donors who actually visited Liberia was there, and she had a heart for these people. When I was in Liberia, I was with some American missionaries. We visited their house, and they gave me a glass of ice water. They had $30,000 worth of solar panels that were running a freezer and a refrigerator and some other electronic appliances. They handed me a glass of water. They said, come back tomorrow and we'll serve you pancakes and bacon. I'm like, I'll be there, because they don't eat like that in Liberia. And I had been enough of the smoked fish and rice the Liberians eat. And so I went back to their house and they handed me again a glass of ice water. And then I was bold enough to say, can you tell me how you filter your water? And you know what their answer was? We don't. And I'm thinking, oh, it's too late now because I'm on my second day of drinking this stuff. And the interesting thing is, their water was tested. Now, they had a bore well that went down 125 feet. Their water was tested by a U.S. company, and that company replied back to them saying, your water is cleaner than water than Americans are drinking out of their taps in the U.S. So just think about what that can mean when, along with the gospel, you put in a well like this in this village. And the next picture is the well going in. Now, this picture is from 2 years ago, and there's Kathy standing in the back. I'm telling you, if it was 2 degrees hotter, we would have fainted. It was so hot there. And then when we went back this time in January, there's the well pumping water. And I'll tell you, we thought, this is going to be a celebration. We're going to visit this village, and they're going to be so happy. Well, they weren't happy, and I was surprised. And the man who's pumping the well was actually, he is so strong. This guy is ripped. He's got muscles on top of muscles. And he is the deacon of the church, and he's also the engineer who put in the well. And he was telling me, we need another well. We need another, and talked to me very forcefully. And I just said to him, I said, hey, if I ever talked to our donors the way that you're talking to me, I wouldn't get a dime from them. And then he said, Bill, please forgive me. And he said, do you know the Old Testament? He said, and you know Moses? And I said, yes. He goes, I'm Moses. He said, you know, in the desert when the Israelites were complaining to Moses and he was taking all that pressure, he said, that's what's happening to me. He said, Bill, what's happening right now is 1,500 people are trying to drink out of this well every day. And this well cannot handle 1,500 people because they have to close the well down. They need it to regenerate or you'll ruin your well. So they open it in the morning for a couple hours and they open it in the evening, but they've got too many people who want water. And he said, so we need another well. I said, okay, I understand. And I just want to say this. Praise the Lord, one of our supporting churches just gave the money for another well in this village. And they needed another well. But there are other villages that need wells like this too. Because when these people go back to drinking in that pool where they're drinking from, they get dysentery and diarrhea and things and they die because they just don't have health care over there the way that we do. And by the way, a well like that well was about $5,000. And that was a hand-dug well about 50 feet deep. Now, the rest of the pictures you're going to see here are just kids in foster care. So when we go to a village, this isn't the kids' brothers and sisters. It's just the kids who are on our rolls in foster care in various villages that we're visiting. Okay, yeah, Kathy also said Ebola. Of course, you know Ebola hit Liberia, killed thousands of people. We raised about $13,000 to get money over there. We weren't so much concerned about the virus because if our kids stayed isolated, they probably wouldn't get the virus. But what we were concerned about is because the government wasn't letting anyone travel, we were concerned that they would starve to death because they wouldn't get the rice and supplies they need. So we raised money for rice supplies, also buckets and chlorine and everything so that they could wash and everything. And praise the Lord, during the Ebola crisis, none of our kids or our staff got it. And so we're pleased to hear that. And go back. Can you go back one picture? You see the girl in the red and the white, red, white skirt? It's just interesting because these kids are truly orphan children. So when one of our administrators was over there, her name is Linda Brooks, and she was over there to bring a child back from Liberia who had encephalitis, and then eventually that child got adopted. Now, Liberia is not open to adoption, but they let this kid out because he was dying with encephalitis. And when they were there, they were in a village, and this happens in these villages. These women give birth, either they die during childbirth, or they don't have any money, or they don't want the child. And so the child came into care, and so this child came into care, a newborn baby at that time, and of course, they've got to name the child. Well, they just decided to name the child Linda Brooks, and she's our COO. So that girl's name in the red and the white is Linda Brooks. So whenever I go to Liberia, Linda Brooks want to know how's Linda Brooks doing. It's just kind of fun. And this is Aaron. This is one of our boys. Aaron was in foster care there, and our foster father was standing out in front of his house one day, and Aaron was a local boy, and he was walking by with a bag in his hand with a lot of stuff in it. And the foster father said, "Aaron, where are you going?" And Aaron said, "I've been kicked out of my house. Can I come and live with you?" And he's from a really dysfunctional family. Now, Aaron trusted Jesus Christ as Savior. He's going to the local church, knows the Lord. Very smart, very bright, very articulate young man. He had a physical problem, though. He had curvature of the spine, not the top part, but the bottom where it curved in like that. So he kind of walked like this when he walked. And really great kid. We always enjoyed time with him. He pulled us aside last time I was there in January, and he said, or in February, I'm sorry. And then he said, "I'm sorry to ask this," because he's a very polite kid. He said, "But I could really use a bicycle." And he could, because it's hard for him to walk and he can ride a bike, but a bike would be a great thing for him. Well, it was just neat because not many months before that, we had a number of people who donated money to the Children's Home for bikes. So I had money earmarked for bicycles. And so we were in the interior. There's a place called Bonga, and we would go to these, they don't have stores the way we do. They're just these little shacks, if you will, where they sell things out of them on the side of the road. And we were driving by, and we saw a couple of bicycles sitting outside the shack, and I turned to one of the pastors there. He's one of the lead pastors, and I said, "Do you think those bicycles are for sale?" He goes, "No, I think they're just bicycles of people who are in the shop." And then we went by another day, and they were still out there. And I said, "You know, maybe they are for sale, because it's hard to find a bicycle. Maybe if we were in Monrovia, we could, the capital." But we stopped in, and we said, "Are those bicycles for sale?" And the guy said, "Yes, they were." And one of them was a beautiful bicycle. And they wanted $85, which is a lot, $85 US for it. But I'm telling you, it was worth $85, even the US. It was a beautiful bicycle. And we bought it for Aaron. When we came and brought it to him, he was so excited, he couldn't even ride it. I mean, he was shaking. He said, "I'm so happy to have this." And we were just laughing because the joy was just amazing. Well, about 4 months ago, we got a call and they said, "Aaron got sick." And Aaron told his foster father, "I'm sick." And they went to the local pharmacy and they got him some medication. I think they got him some like ibuprofen or some kind of mild painkiller. He's complaining of abdominal pains. And the next day he wasn't getting any better. So they called the doctor, and the doctor sent over a physician's assistant. And by the time the physician's assistant had gotten there, Aaron had died. His appendix had burst. And I tell that story because of a number of reasons. Where would Aaron have been if he weren't in our care? And then so often we as adults think, you know, we've got our children for 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, 90 years. Well, we only had Aaron for 15 years, and that we didn't even have all 15 years with him. And so I just think it kind of brings back the sobriety, the idea of make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. You know, and cherish and take advantage of the time you have with your kids, because we purely expected Aaron to graduate from high school and then go on to college. And we would have supported him all the way through that. Next picture. This is called Hope Student Center. We're winding down here. Hope Student Center is a place for college students to stay, to go to college at the University of Liberia. If you're going to Bible college, there's some other Bible colleges there, but if you're going in for any other trade or whatever you want to go to degree, you need to go to the University of Liberia. That's outside of Monrovia. But our kids, who are very poor, can't afford to get places. So what we did is we built a home that will take in about 32 students. They'll take in students from the churches, and they'll pay a little money, room and board, to stay there, and it'll help offset the cost so our kids can stay there for free. And so we just built this building, and while we're there, I'm cutting the ribbon for it. It's fully funded, and that is Pastor William and Cecilia. He and his wife will be the mentors there, and they'll mentor the college students while they go to college, because college is still secular there too. They got to talk these kids through a secular school. And Liberia, University of Liberia, is a really good school as well. And our kids who go to that school will be leaders in this country. And you can see, that's just showing you one of the rooms in that building. And it's so wonderful. Our donors are so great. We were there, and they were gonna probably paint the floors. They were concrete floors. And I was like, you know, these concrete floors just won't last in this environment. It's just too humid, too much water gets on those floors. I said, we really should probably tile these floors, because it'll make them last a lot longer. And one of our donors just stepped up and gave $15,000 to make sure that entire building was tiled. And I'm sorry, I don't have a picture. They sent us some pictures, but they weren't good pictures of the tile. And the neat thing was, I was surprised what tile they picked. They picked the kind of tile we choose in the U.S. that looks like wood. So it's tile, but it's got wood pattern in it. I just thought it was interesting. And so that building is just now being populated. And then I just finish out with this picture, because this is a picture of a girl that we took a picture of in one of the villages there. And I think her face speaks volumes, doesn't it, of what these Liberian people have been through. And then just to finish off with this, I would say, especially when we're talking about believers in other countries all over the world, you see, we are one family in God. You know what I mean? So often we think of, we're Americans. You know, we are part of the church, and the church is an international agency. You know what I mean? And we are going to worship with every tribe and with every nation together for eternity. And, you know, having a relationship with people who are our brothers and sisters in Christ really means something. Some of you, and I know many of you here, have traveled internationally and gone on mission trips, and you know what it means to be with someone. Sometimes you don't eat the same food, you don't even speak the same language. But we start singing hymns, and the scriptures start being preached, and you found your long-lost brother and sister. You know, and sometimes our brothers and sisters are going through difficult times, and sometimes we're going through difficult times, right? And it's really good to be able to come alongside them and help them. And then someday in heaven, we'll meet these people and we'll share the stories about what the ministry that we did and the ministry that we had together, and how we were all saved by the grace and the power of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen? And so there you go. Pastor, thanks for giving me some time.